All right, welcome to CSE 75, section 2. My name is Keita Uchiyama. Sid can't make it today, so I'm filling in. I've told the class twice in the past, and today I'm going to go over PHP continued. So you've been looking at PHP in lecture and section. You've seen that it's a programming language intended for the web and for creating dynamic websites, which this course is all about. So today we'll take a look at PHP, how to handle forms, and most importantly of all, sessions, which you'll use in PizzaML, the next problem set coming out on Monday. So first I'd like to just go over an overview of how you use PHP in an HTML page so that you know the basic framework. Stop me if you have any questions, like raise your hand and let me know if anything's confusing. Okay. All right, so the first example here, I've created this page called example0.php. So he says, hello, you must be Bob. Can everyone see the text? And then there are 10 strips of color, paragraphs, on the page. And can anyone figure out how I might have created this page?
HTML,
CSS, yep. You're both correct. This is created using both HTML and CSS, but behind the hood, it's actually created using PHP. So I didn't go in my text editor and create each of these lines manually. I actually used PHP to generate this HTML page on the fly. Yes? Yeah, exactly. So I used a for loop, or for each loop, actually. So I'll open up the source code here, if everyone can see this. There's some ugly green highlighting here. So basically, this is my PHP page. I start off with the doc type. Which is, as you've probably already seen, this is saying to the web browser, hey, this is an XHTML page, render it as such. And then I have the necessary preamble for HTML, and then I have that all-important OpenPHP opening tag here. Can everyone see that? So this means that everything from here to here is PHP code. It's not HTML code. So the one thing about PHP is that it's HTML, but like a sugared version of HTML, so to speak. So it's like it's an HTML page, but there's PHP code within. So you can create two types of PHP pages. One is a PHP page that has just PHP code. You can do that. This is the other type, where you have HTML and then PHP inside. So here we can see that in our PHP code, if you're familiar with Java, C, C++, any of those languages, you'll be familiar with the syntax. Line 9 here, we create a variable called Bob. Can anyone tell me what type this is?
String,
yeah. And then I say echo, hello, you must be. And then the dot here, what is this?
Concatenation.
Yep.
Just a quick question.
Yes. So the question is, does a string require double quotes or single quotes? It doesn't. It requires either. So I was actually going to mention that later, but since you mentioned it, strings can go either in single quotes, as you can see here, and in double quotes, as you can see here, right? And there are many considerations that go into either using single quotes or double quotes. Most of them don't really matter, but in this case, I could have used a single quote here, but I used double quotes. So the difference between single quotes and double quotes is that you can actually embed variables inside double quotes. So instead of saying double quotes and then dot, which is the concatenation operator, dollar name, dot, and then another string that has an exclamation point and backslash n, what is that?
New line,
yeah. So instead of having that, I could actually have replaced this with a single string that merely says dollar name. So hello, you must be dollar name. And this will actually print out the same thing. Hello, you must be Bob. So the thing about double quotes is that it supports an extra feature of PHP in that you can embed variables inside strings, just like this. In single quotes, you can't do that. So if you try to say hello, you must be Bob using single quotes, then you'll be very disappointed because it will actually print out the code inside verbatim, like that. See? So that's the difference between single quotes and double quotes. Other times you might want to differentiate between single quotes and double quotes is that if you're writing, say, an HTML tag inside PHP code, and you want to print out a tag, which we see here. So for example, piece style background color. And you see here we're using single quotes inside the tag. So we don't want to use single quotes here, right? Because if you use single quotes for both of those, then PHP will have no idea whether you're trying to print out an HTML tag or whether you're trying to tell it that it's the beginning or the end of a string, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so thanks for the question. That's very important, single quotes and double quotes, but they're both strings. Yes?
Does it follow then at all similar to how Perl uses the differences between single and double quotes? Like if you want exec to type things to be exactly the way you type it, you use single quotes, where if you want, I think the word Perl uses extrapolation or interpretation, you use double quotes?
Yeah, that's right. So the question was, is it similar to Perl, which has the same kind of distinction with single quotes and double quotes? That's right. A single quoted string is a constant string in that everything inside is printed out. Double quotes, things are extrapolated, variables are imported into the string. So that's the difference. So what do I have here? I have another kind of data structure. This is not a string. What is it? It's an array. Yeah. And here I have an array of 10 elements, red, orange, green, pink, salmon, blue, da-da-da. These are all strings inside an array. So this is an array of strings. And of course, because PHP is so friendly about types, you can insert any type of data within an array. So you can mix strings and integers and reals and whatnot inside inside the same array. So it needn't be the same kind of data type that is inside an array, unlike C or other languages. So here we have a for loop for $i equals 0, $i smaller than 10, $i plus plus, which means that I is going from 0 to 10, and the, 0 to 9, because it's small. It'll repeat until it's while it's smaller than 10. And then it'll repeat this code block, line 15, where we say pstyle background color, da-da-da. So what am I doing here? I'm actually using another type of extrapolation, as you said. So what am I doing here? I have this open, can everyone see the syntax? Yeah, so dollar $colors and then dollar $i. So what am I doing here? I'm using these weird braces. It's not a code block, but it's still braces within the string.
Index?
Yeah, so these square brackets are indexes, are you're indexing into the colors array using whatever is inside dollar $i at that point. So yeah, that's right. But why am I using these braces? These curly braces here. Has anyone seen these? So this is actually another type of way to import variables. And the thing is, if you try to do this, it actually fails. You see here that Vim's syntax highlighting has gone astray. It doesn't know what you're trying to do because are you trying to say dollar $colors and then this bracket and then dollar $i and then close bracket? Or are you trying to say dollar $colors, dollar $i? Right? Do you get the distinction? There's two ways of interpreting this string, right? So to make it clear to PHP, we have to do this. We enclose the entire expression in a curly brace pair, and that's how you get the code that you see here, which is you see here that the color has been filled in. Is that right? Does everyone see how this works? Yes.
So if you took out those braces and ran the script.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take out the braces. And then run the script. okay. So in this case, it actually worked. Why is that? Pardon? Yeah, it worked. okay, let's just say in some cases it doesn't work. So it's good practice to enclose such things in braces because you as the programmer might not know whether that works or not. See, I didn't know, so, you know, and I've been using PHP for a while. So it's good to do, use that kind of syntax in a string if you're trying to import a complex expression that's not just a variable name. Okay, with that done, any questions about this script? Yes?
What if your variable is a numeric type? Will it do the data conversion for you or not? What will convert like from numeric to string?
Yeah. So, good question. So the question was if it's another type, for example, if it's a number, were you thinking of something along the lines of if x equals 8 and then I try to say $x, would that print out the right thing. And it, yes, it does. You can see here that 8 has been inserted into the string. So this is sort of weird. If you're coming from C or some other language that strictly enforces the enforces types, but PHP doesn't enforce types, so it'll freely convert any type that that can possibly be converted if you're trying to put it into a string. So even though this is the $x is an integer and not a string, PHP will automatically convert it into a string and then insert it into whatever you wanted to insert it into. Okay. Any other questions? Yes. Yes, all variables in PHP require a dollar sign in front of the variable name. So in C, this is valid syntax, but in PHP, that doesn't mean anything. So you have to put the dollar sign. All right. So David covered superglobals in lecture, I believe. And there was a whole list. There are three here that I've written up, dollar get, dollar post, dollar session, and there are other ones like dollar env, dollar server, et cetera, et cetera. But today I'm going to focus on these three superglobals. So can anyone tell me what a superglobal is? Yes?
It's available on your whole, like, any files mm-hmm. on your web server.
That's right, yeah. So a superglobal is an array or a global that is available in every part of your code. So PHP has a weird way to use globals, but these superglobals are available in every context, wherever you write your code. So $get and $post, these come as a set. Does everyone understand the difference between get and post methods? I can go over it, yeah. Okay, so if I go to google.com, and then I type in, I don't know, computers, and then hit enter, I have this this weird syntax after the question mark. So okay, Google recently changed their technology not to do that, but they copied Facebook. So you see here that there's something after the question mark, and then all these weird key value pairs, key equals value pairs, separated by ampersands. So what type of method is this? Is this a get or a post request?
Get.
It's get, yeah. So with post, let's see, what's an example of a post request? What website might use a post request? Pardon?
Login.
Yeah, login information would use post, primarily because you really don't want your username and password in the clear in the location bar. For example, if you use Gmail and you send an email, your email doesn't suddenly appear in the location bar. That's because it's using a post request method. So that's the difference. And in PHP, the difference is actually very very small. So if I open up this example, example1.html, and I'll open up the corresponding source code, you'll see here that I have just an HTML page. There's no PHP in this one. Can you see? Basically, I have a form with action example1.php. What does action mean? Action is the So it's the destination of whatever you typed in to the form. So I have a form action example1.php, and the method is get. So whatever I type in here will appear in the location bar. Okay, and then I have another text box. I have a text box that says input type text, and the name is your name, and I've specified a size, and then I have a submit button. So is everyone familiar with this kind of form? Everyone worked on the first project that I think used forms, right? Yeah. So this is an HTML page, and you probably want to see example1.php because that's where all the fun stuff is happening. So if I open up example1.php, it's actually even simpler than the HTML. So I'll show you how this works. It says, what is your name? If I type in my name and then I hit greet me, I get taken to example1.php with your name equals Cato. And then it says, welcome, Cato. So let's look at the PHP here. Just ignore everything outside of the PHP code block because it's not essential. But just look at this line, line 9, where I say, echo welcome, and then I can concatenate $_get your name, and then concatenate some other string. So what is this $_get your name? What data type does it look like? Okay, I'm hearing conflicting answers. I've heard superglobal and string, and I hope someone said array, because that's what it is. $_get is a superglobal, and the data type is array. So what this is dollar underscore get is basically an array that contains all the keys and value pairs that were sent to this page by example1.html. Okay, so example1.html sent example1.php your name. That's the only thing it sent, and we see here in the location bar that that's what it sent. So dollar underscore get is an array that contains just that one element. And I can show you using the var export function. You don't need to know this, but just to make a point. This basically prints out whatever is inside the brackets as a PHP piece of code. So you can see here the dollar underscore get was actually an array with a key, your name, that mapped to my name. Okay. So dollar underscore get is an array. It's also a superglobal, and dollar underscore get your name is a string because it's indexing into the dollar underscore get array. Yeah.
What happens if you put your name is you misspell or you give the name that's not how you defined it?
Oh, so if so, the question was what happens if I don't use your name but use something else? Yeah, okay, so if I use name, and let's say I submitted the form and the location bar changed, so the array changes now. The key here is name instead of your name as it used to be. It's name now, and this piece of code obviously isn't working. And if you've seen any broken websites where they've tried to say something like this but they failed, that's exactly what you've done. You've either submitted the form wrong, or more likely, they've coded it wrong and used the wrong key for the dollar underscore get array. Right. It doesn't crash or anything. So the great thing about PHP is that it rarely crashes. Well, that's not true, but it crashes. But in these cases, if it can't find the variable you're looking for, it'll just spit out a notice, which is a hidden error, and it won't actually do anything to your program. Yes?
Could you also down get index 0?
Get index 0. So the thing, if you look at this array, it's actually an associative array. It's an array of strings to values. So it doesn't actually support indexing by numbers because it's not a numerically indexed array. So there are two types of arrays in PHP, one that's numerically indexed and one that's associative, such as this array, dollar underscore get. So in this case, it won't work. So if I say dollar name equals Cato and I add some other elements here, you can see here that my dollar underscore get array was populated with the other value that I added. Okay. So that's very simple. That's dollar underscore get. And the same thing will happen if I change this to dollar underscore post. And if I change this, the form to submit as post, and then I reload example1.html. This time I'm submitting as post. And then I say greet me. See here there's no change in the URL. But this is the dollar underscore post array now. The dollar underscore post array contains your name, Cato Post. And you can see here it works exactly as it did before. All I did was replace the word get with the word post, and it just works. Okay, so you can use get and post interchangeably as long as you make sure that the form and the backend PHP use the same method. Okay. And one thing is that you can actually mix get and post. So you can have a form that takes both get and post variables. So, for example, you might want to do this if you're, let's say you're creating your PizzaML pizza menu, and let's say you have several order forms, and one is for each category. So you might want to say order.php question mark category equals salads. And you might want to submit some data, submit like a message or your name to that page using post. But you also want to use get because you want to have that question mark category equals part. Okay, so you can mix get and post in the same page, and it will act fine. So in this post example, this is an HTML. This is the HTML. If you wanted to use get, you can actually manually insert whatever you want to insert here. So category equals salads, and then here you'll be posting here to a page which also accepts get parameters. Does that make it clear? Okay. So any questions about? Sorry. Would the question mark and equals get encoded? No, it wouldn't. It would just remain. What do you mean by it gets encoded?
With the percent sign.
So the percent sign is used when, for example, you use a question mark within a get variable, or if you use a space, it gets turned into a plus sign. So that's so it doesn't get confused. Here, it doesn't really matter because. Let's say I try to post this. You see here that nothing happened to the URL. The category is still salads, and the post variable is still there. Yeah?
Can you insert it onto that page? So if I understand this properly, if you insert it on that page, mm-hmm. free with a variable category, mm-hmm. you should see salads just as
yeah.
a name?
Right. So the question was, does it actually work? More or less.
I believe it works.
I hope it works. So here we have $_get_category, and I'm just echoing that, plain and simple. If I resubmit that form, see here that we have salads. So we've successfully used both post and get variables within the same page. Okay? All right, any questions about this example? Nope. Okay, so I want to go on to a little bit more sophisticated example, which will be even more useful for your next project. I believe this is example 2.html. So this one is a little bit more code. Not necessarily more complicated, but just more code. Example 2.php. Oh, whoops, not PHP, sorry. Gave that away. So here we have an HTML form. I have a text box. What is your name? And then I have, what does this look like? Does anyone know what this kind of this element is called? Combo box. Yeah, combo box in other languages. In HTML, it's called. I hope I heard select. Pardon? It is a drop down menu. Yeah. So combo box, drop down menu, select box. Those are all the same thing. In HTML, it's called a select tag. And here I have three choices. And then this is a checkbox. And I have a radio button here. You probably saw this in the Frosh IAMS example that David just showed in the lecture. So this is just an HTML page, no PHP here. Just to go over how these are created, you create a text box by saying input type text. That's simple. And then you create a select box like this. So you have select name, which creates an element, which creates the drop-down menu itself. And then inside the drop-down menu, you want to have various elements that you want to put in the drop-down menu. So here I have three elements. The elements inside a drop-down menu are denoted using the option tag. So option value equals vanilla. This means that the actual value being submitted by the form, by that combo box, is whatever is inside value. And what's shown to the user when he or she selects it from the form is whatever's within the two option tags, these. So vanilla is shown to the user, as you can see here, but lowercase vanilla is sent to the server. So it's clearer here where green space T is shown to the user, but when it's submitted, it'll submit the value green T as if you just typed it into the form. Okay. So a combo box really isn't that different from a text box. It's just that you get to specify what a user can input. And then the next element I have here is the checkbox. Very simple. It just takes a name, cone. And then I have these three radio buttons. Radio buttons are special in that you can have multiple radio buttons on the same page that have the same name. And you really should, because if you don't, then if you have multiple sets of radio buttons, you won't know which ones should get unselected. So if I select, say, chestnuts here, cherries gets unselected, but how does the web browser know that cherries and chestnuts, these two checkboxes, are in the same set? It knows because the name is the same. Name equals topping. Okay? And, of course, these have to have different values because then you won't know which one was sent. So it's very similar to how the options worked here. You see here that the same value attribute is used to specify what's being sent to the server, and this is what's actually being shown. So just four types of ways to input various data into a form. So if I just fill this out, yes, I like cones. What kind of topping do you want? Cheese. Greet me. So here you see, welcome Kato. Your favorite type of ice cream is green tea. So you can see here that even though I selected the word green tea, in the form it's now green tea because of the value attribute, right? This as opposed to this. And then you want a cone or not. This is a bit of a weirdo in that you want a cone or not is on. So you'd think that if I didn't select the checkbox, it would say off, but it doesn't. It actually sends you an empty string, or it doesn't actually send you anything if the checkbox isn't selected.
So you can change that on from on to yes?
I believe you can just select set a value. Let's see here. Yeah, so if you select a value, it'll change to whatever you wanted it to say. But in either case, whether you set a value or not, if you don't select something, it'll just display empty. That's because you'll see here that the cone key hasn't been set. You see, there's your name, ice cream, and topping, but cone is missing. And when cone is checked, it's not missing. You see here that cone equals yes. Okay, so it becomes missing when the checkbox isn't selected. So that's just how it works. Yeah.
So if you were going to do a test, a conditional test on that, mm-hmm. you have to test the string that's to be assigned. If it's not assigned, it would come back as null.
Yeah. So I would personally use the isSet function in PHP to check whether the checkbox was selected or not. So have you guys learned isSet? So isSet checks to see whether a variable is set or not. So unlike C, there's no compiler, so it won't complain if a variable if you haven't defined a variable. But if you use isSet, you can check to see if the variable's been defined or if it hasn't been defined. So if it's not in the array, isSet will return false. And I'll show details of this later. So that's the HTML form. I'm sure David's already mentioned input validation. Whenever you receive data from a user, it's always important to check that the user has inputted the correct things. And you'll see later, for example, if you're using SQL and using a database, if you let a user input anything they want, then they could wreak havoc with your website. So it's always important to check the data that the user's inputted. So actually, I'll use the isSet here. So let's see, how do I check to see if the user wants a cone or not? I can say if isSet $_getCone. If it's set cone, then I can say you want a cone. Or if not, I can say you don't want a cone. So I've got this simple input validation. This isn't really input validation, but it's a way to check input. So let's refresh. And so you want a cone or not. This is confusing. It says you want a cone because I selected the checkbox on this page. If I don't select the checkbox, it will now tell me you don't want a cone. Okay? So you see here that the isSet is working to check whether a variable has been set or not. Yep?
Would it be possible to actually assign a value if it was null or empty or whatever? Could you assign a value to $getCone yourself inside?
You could, yeah.
So you get value yes, mm-hmm. if it's not set, just say $getSign=no.
Right, yeah. So it is possible to modify the $_get or $_post or any of the superglobals yourself. It is possible to modify them after you've gotten them from the server. And whether that's good or not is up to you. You might get confused if you start modifying the $_get and $_post arrays. It's better programming practice to copy the variables into a different array. But you can certainly change $_get if that suits your fancy. So other types of input validation you might use, what's an obvious one? How might you want to check that the user has actually done their job?
Whether it's empty or not.
So let's check to see if the name's actually been specified. There's actually the very handy empty function in PHP that will check to see if something is empty or not. And then I can say you didn't type in your name. So if I go ahead and not type in my name, then it'll say you didn't type in your name. Okay. So these are two functions that are very handy in input validation, empty and isSet. Okay. Empty works like the equals equals empty string construct, but it's also a sort of isSet, because empty will not throw an error even if the string hasn't been defined in the first place. Okay. So I mentioned a concept of notices, that PHP is actually throwing an error when you say welcome dollar underscore get your name, and dollar underscore get your name isn't defined. But if you use the empty tag, you can check both things. You can check to see that A, the variable has been defined, and B, the variable is not the empty string. Okay? So empty is very handy when using this kind of input validation. Any questions about that? No. Okay. So I mentioned that you have to check everything, and I also mentioned that the combo box acts like a text box in that, you can limit what the user selects in the form, but the user can, if let's say I did type in my name. So, okay, your favorite type of ice cream is chocolate, right? But you see here, this is a get query. So I can just go ahead and say, I don't know, porcupines. And then this has changed. And this wasn't an option that I had on the form. You see where I'm going? You actually have to check it on the server side as well. Not only do you have to provide the user with the right choices, but you also have to check that the user actually specified one of those choices. And this applies for get and post, because post can be modified just a little bit more difficultly than get. So what we want to do here is we want to check that, what do we want to check? That we want to check that dollar underscore get ice cream is a type that we defined earlier. So, you know, you can think of doing this in various ways, but let's say we have an array, ice cream choices. That was, I don't remember the order, but it doesn't matter. I think these were the three choices I had. So I can say, if it's not one of these choices, then throw an error. So how do I do that? Can anyone venture a guess? Button? Member? Yeah, so something like member. A for loop, yeah. I could go through each of these elements in the array to checking to see if they were of the type. Pardon? Contains. So you've thrown all these function names. PHP is very is very weird in that it has various function ways to say the same thing. But in PHP, it's called in underscore array. So the function to use here is if in array. So this, I believe this takes it in the order needle haystack. So you know the adage to find a needle in a haystack. This is something that programmers like to say, and you often find a needle in a haystack. So you find a string in an array, find a needle in a haystack, string in an array. So string, the string here is, what's the needle that I'm trying to find? Yeah, so dollar underscore get ice cream. And then what's the haystack? Ice cream choices. Yeah. So if in array dollar get underscore choices, then, well, so if not in array, right? If it's not the correct one. So bang, the exclamation point negates whatever is after it. So I can say echo, you messed with the form. Because they did, right? So let's say, so I'm going to refresh this page with porcupines. And you see here that it says you messed with the form. And usually with a web application, you probably want to quit there. You want to throw an error message and tell the user to go back and fill it in again. So, and just to check that this works, if I type in something in vanilla, it works. Okay, so I've shown you three types of input validation here: empty, ice cream, in array, and isSet. These are very handy. Yes?
If PHP is throwing an error.
Yeah, so if the question was, if PHP is throwing an error, how do we see it? There are many ways, but if we say error reporting eol, bear with me if this doesn't work on first try. Let's see. Yeah, so basically here this is the notice, undefined index cone in the file and then line. Okay. So what I did was I inserted this line, error underscore reporting e all. You might not actually need this on the CS75.net server because it might be configured with the to throw all error messages that are being shown. But here on my server, it doesn't actually do it. So you can insert that line if errors don't appear to be appearing. Okay. And bad errors will always appear. Like big bad errors that you make will, like syntax errors will always appear. But these notices won't unless you specify. Okay. So any other questions about this, about this example? Great. Okay, so I wanted to talk about sessions, and has David gone over this in lecture already?
Yes.
Okay, a little. So I've got this. I've got this slide here explaining sessions. So what sessions are that there's page one and page two. So the thing about HTTP, about web programs, is that they don't maintain state. So when I go to page one, I say to the server, "Can I have page one?" And then I want to go to page two, and then I say to the server, "Can I have page two?" But I'm never saying, "I'm also the same person that requested page one. Can you customize the page for me?" And that's what sessions will let you do. So it's sort of it's overriding an inherent inability of HTTP to maintain state across various requests. So what this means in practice is that if I say page one from page one, if I say if I use this function session start and then specify a value in the dollar underscore session superglobal. This is another superglobal. And then it goes into the session storage space, which exists on the server side. And then I go to page two, and then I request page two from the server. And I use this code, session underscore start, print session name, and it actually yields Alice, which is what I stored in the session storage space above in the first request. And it actually does this by giving you a unique identifier in something called a cookie, which David went over. And this identifier is like 32 digits or something. And it uniquely identifies you to the server. So the server also maintains a mapping between these unique strings to whatever you stored in the dollar underscore session array. Okay, so it's pretty simple, right? And the great thing about sessions is that you can have more than one user. Right, so you know, Google, Microsoft, Facebook—they all have more than one user using their website, obviously. So, what PHP sessions let you, well, sessions in general let you do is that if Bob comes along and asks for page one and then sets session name to Bob, he doesn't get it doesn't say Alice for him, even though it's also in the session storage space, because there's a unique identifier for him. It'll actually say Bob. Okay, so the session storage space will store everyone's data. Basically. Any questions about that? Yeah? Okay, so let's see this in practice in PHP. So sessions apply to any language, not just PHP, but we're using PHP here, so I'll look at example 3.1.html. So this is the same as example 1, actually. But there's a different, it's asking your name, but there's a different backend to it. Example 3.2.php. So let's go to example 3.31.html. So what is your name? I type in my name. Remember me. So it says, thank you for telling me your name, Bob. I've now stored it in your session. So what is it actually doing behind the surface? Beneath the surface, rather. So this is example 3.2.php, which is the this page that we've been navigated to from the form. You see here, I'm doing some input validation here. I'm checking to see that the name has actually been provided. If empty, so this is a post request. If empty, dollar underscore post your name, then complain. So if I say, if I don't type in anything, then you know, it complains, which is good. So if I did type in my name, what is it doing? See here that it goes into this else clause, and then it's storing dollar underscore post your name, which is, what's the value in this case? Bob, yeah. So it's storing the string Bob in dollar underscore session name. So this is something we haven't seen in this section so far. Pardon? There is a session start. I put it up right up here.
Oh.
So yeah, very important. Before you use a session on any PHP page, you have to make sure you write the code session start. You have to You have to start the session before you do anything on the page. And it's important that you use that you write this on the first line and not here, or not on the second line, not on the third line, not anywhere interspersed with the code, but on the very first line. And this is because it sends an HTTP header, which won't be able to, which you can't send if there's any data before the session start function call. So if I do this, if I insert a blank line, you'll get this error. Warning, session start cannot send session cache limiter. So if you see this anytime when you're coding your project, and believe me, I've seen it loads of times. Just delete that blank line or delete that whatever's preventing the HTTP header from being sent. Yeah.
When you say session start, mm-hmm. Does it explicitly just set aside the session array for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So session start is very nice because it does a bunch of things. It sets up the session storage space for that user. It gives the user a session identifier, which it sends as a cookie. So this is cookies are sent as HTTP headers. So that's why you're getting this error message if you
do it. Do you still need to explicitly assign the values for each and every variable?
So by value.
You have to say session name equal to post your name.
Oh, so yes, if you do have to specify all these variables for each user, it's because you're trying to customize your website to the user. So here, back to this line 13. What am I doing here? I'm putting the string Bob into the key name of the $_session superglobal. So what is this doing? You can think of it as basically heaping, like getting the string Bob and then dumping it into the session storage space for that particular user. So whenever you use $_session, it's always initialized if you've used session start. It's always initialized for that particular user. So you can dump whatever you want into $_session. And as I said, PHP arrays can take any type of type within them. So I can say $_session, favorite number equals an integer. And I can do that as well. So basically, this code would put both name and favorite number into the session storage space for that particular user, into the session of that user. Okay. So it's stored in. It says it's stored into the session, and then it tells me to go to another page. So usually, if I didn't have a session, if I went to another page, what would it do? Would I still be able to retrieve the name of that user? No, right? Because there's no get or post. It's just a link. Ahref example 3.php. It's just a link. There's no get or post going on. So obviously there must be something magic going on in the background. So if I go to another page, it actually knows my name. Welcome back, Bob. And why is that? It's sessions. So here I've on the first line I've got PHP session start. You must remember to use the function session start before anything, even before reading, before writing, before destroying the session. You have to say session start. And then from line 10, I'm checking the $_session variable here. So you'll notice that it's the same. The same value that I used, the same key that I used here, $_session name, and then $_session name. So I'm checking to see if that's set. It is set. And then if it's set, then I will echo back the person's name. Welcome back, Bob. And if it isn't, it'll say you're not logged in. Okay. I have another example that will be useful. Example 3.4.php. This is very simple, and it looks very similar to what David wrote in one of his lecture examples. What am I doing here? What's a common name for what I'm doing here? Yeah, logging out the user. So I'm logging out the user here. I say session start because before you use sessions, even if you're destroying it, you need to say session start. And then I'm clearing all the variables we've stored in the session. So the name, the favorite number, whatever I stored in the $_session array for that particular user is cleared from the storage space. And then I unset the cookie. So basically what this does is that it says to the user, the identifier that I gave you before is no longer valid. So don't remember an identifier anymore. And then on line 12, the all-important session_destroy function. This just destroys the function. This deletes the function. This just deletes the session from the server, so that the server no longer knows the name or the favorite number of the user. And then I just say a session has been destroyed. So let's run this script, bearing in mind that we're currently logged in. However many times I refresh this page, I'm still going to get the name because it's stored in the session. But if I go to example3.4.php, the logout page, your session has been destroyed. So what will happen now if I go back to example3.3? So it's going to tell me that I'm logged out. See? You're not logged in. So great. So I've been able to log a user in, and I've been able to read a user from a session, read variables from the session, and I've been able to log someone out. So it's basically the login logout process that I've implemented in these three examples. Yes.
Can you just use the session destroy without clearing up all the array?
Yeah.
So
the question was, do you actually need all this code before session destroy? And the answer is no. If you use session destroy, it'll actually destroy the session as well. It's just useful if this is the logout page and you've got some other code below it and you're trying to use $_session underneath for some reason, or just to clarify things, I've destroyed it. But really, you can just do away with it and it'll be the same. Just for clarity's sake. And I believe in David's example, he didn't actually delete all the variables in the $_session. Okay, so what is the question, what is the time for? So the setCookie is for any PHP function. If you go to php.net/the name of the function, you'll get the manual page. You see here that it takes the name, the value, the expiration time, and the path, domain, secure, et cetera, et cetera.
And is that all in seconds?
Yes, so this is in seconds. This is in Unix time. And Unix time, as you might know, is seconds since the Unix epoch, which is in January 1980. So it's saying time, which is the current Unix time, minus 3,600, so 60 times 60. Yeah, so if it's setting the expiration date of the cookie in the past, so the web browser will just discard it. Yes?
Is it correct that setCookie is on the client or a session destroy is on the server?
These are both on the server because PHP is a server-side programming language. It never runs on the client. But you make a good point in that the cookie, it has to be sent to the client, right? So when you call setCookie in PHP, it'll actually send a new cookie back to the browser, which will say destroy the cookie named session name. Session name is a special function that returns the name of the session, which is the name of the cookie. And in most cases, it's PHP sess ID. If you don't specify a session name manually. So basically, it's clearing the cookie by setting it to an expiration date that's before now. And it'll send that to the client. So it's important that you specify the setCookie function before you send anything else. So similar to how you have to write session start before any other data is sent to the server, if you type in any junk here or leave a blank line a blank line in HTML before the setCookie call, then it'll error. Okay, so always make sure that you don't have any blank lines in your HTML. It's okay to have blank lines in your PHP because however many blank lines you have in your PHP, it's all condensed into one. But in HTML, that's not the case. It's sent as an actual space character to the browser.
Don't you need the question mark greater than sign?
Yes. I was hoping someone would ask the question. Don't you need the question mark end tag at the end of this file? The answer is you don't. And that's because, in PHP, if you're ending a page with a PHP code block, then you can leave it out. And it's actually useful to do that because let's say I did this. Left a blank line on line 16 after the question mark end. And then let's say I included this code into another file. Let's say I have an include example3.4.php, and then I have some code that includes a setCookie. Now what would happen? So what has it actually done? It's pasted in this file into the top of the other file, and then after that it's tried to call setCookie, or it's tried to call session start. And what's the error that I'll see there?
Header's already sent.
Yeah, I'll actually see headers already sent because of this. because of that blank line on line 16, right? So when you include a file into a different file, it's actually pasting the entire contents of that file, including any empty lines like this. So that's why most PHP programmers will actually omit the end question mark tag at the end of very end of a file. Okay. Any other questions about this? Yes?
Once you set the session variable, mm-hmm. you have a bunch of pages.
Yeah.
Let's say you're starting, you set it in page 2, and you have session start in every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Will that session variable be available in page 8?
So, yes. The question was, if you have lots of pages including the session variable, will it still be available?
No.
You
set it in page 2.
Mm-hmm.
But all the pages have session start with it. Will it show up in page 8?
Oh, so do you mean, can you use the session variable on a page that where you haven't used session start?
No. I'm trying to think of, do these session variables get accumulated?
Oh, yeah.
Meaning, if you keep, mm-hmm. Having session start, session, I was trying to think, that,
yeah.
Okay, you've got name here, mm-hmm. and next one you do address,
right.
And then this, and so you're having session start,
yeah.
And all of them, so eventually mm-hmm. you get a big...
Yeah. That's a great question. So if you have, say, 8 pages, each with their own little additions to the $_session array, so if you set the name here, the age here, and the gender here, all of those will accumulate in the same session array, because the same $_session array is available to all pages that use session_start. Okay? So that's how you can, say, if you have a separate preferences page and a separate login page, then you can say login, and then you can also change the preferences on a different page, or like add data or remove data from the $_session array selectively. Great question. Yeah?
Could you explain again why we need to do set cookie before session destroy? What would happen if you didn't do the set cookie?
If you didn't do the set cookie, so it's... it's debatable whether you actually need it, because you don't. Once you destroy the session, the browser will still try to send the same identifier to the server, but the server will say, I don't know that identifier, so I'm just going to ignore that. But just to remove that kind of the bandwidth of unnecessary identifiers, we're setting the cookie, or we're unsetting the cookie here. So it's a relationship between the client, which knows just the identifier, and the server, which knows all these identifiers to variables inside the sessions. Does that make it clear? Okay. Yeah, you had a question?
Is there a maximum memory size for the session?
Yes. There is a maximum memory size. It's set in the PHP INI file. But it's pretty big. And but you probably don't want to store entire files in it. You probably want to put files elsewhere. But for strings and arrays, it'll be a while before you get to large data structures, so you probably don't need to worry about that.
What if you want to instantiate a class? Can you put a class in there?
You can put anything in there. You can put an instance of a class in there. There are certain things you can't put in a session, and you'll see that with XML when you deal with it, but most things can be put in there. Yeah. Yes?
Can we have these examples available?
Yes, I'll put these up on the website. Yeah.
Oh,
really? So the video of the section I saw earlier was available. If you go to sections, the video is down here, video flash. So if you click this, you'll get last week's section. And I'll put the files up here as well, so you can get them from there.
It's not under the
sections?
No, it's not under the particular section.
Oh.
That was the trick, yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh, right, yeah. Okay, so... that's it for this week. That was PHP Continued. And if you have any questions, I'll be around. And thank you, and see you next week.